Professor Peter Lynham. Oh, let me turn you up there, Peter. How are you?
Very good. So I have been thinking and waiting in anticipation of the bloody pictures from the day of Ashura. And I've been a bit disappointed.
I'll tell you what, you sound disappointed. I don't think I've ever heard you use such stern language, Peter.
So the day of Ashura is traditionally a day when Shiite Muslim men cut themselves with swords or beat their backs with chains until they bleed in order to commemorate with grief the death of the grandson of the Prophet Muhammad, blessed be his name. And so this is quite a significant event, a bit tricky to practice in a hygienic way.
Yeah, I was just thinking that. It's not modern, get a bit upset with that. Also, are the knives sharp, or are they kind of, is it more like blunt force that's doing the...
Well, there are a few pictures that I found looking up, of all places, the Seamy Daily Mail in England has some great pictures. I believe the Sun probably has a few as well, but that's really at the lower end of journalism. And they would seem to show that people get very, very covered in blood.
Is it the more beaten you get, the more you're doing a great job kind of thing?
Yes, well, you see, if you can manage to cry for the death of Hussein, the grandson of the Prophet, then in fact there's significant rewards promised in the afterlife for you, potentially forgiveness of all your sins.
And who's doing the beating? Of, is it like say if John and I were entering this thing, would John beat me and I beat John and then we leave it at
no,
that?
No, you do it to, you must do it to each other, to yourselves.
Oh, so you smack, oh, what?
Yes.
Oh,
yes,
okay.
Yes. So you flagellate yourself.
Okay.
Because you're so covered in grief at this significant moment
sounds,
in history.
Sounds like it might be quite traumatic. Is everybody like kind of like getting into it and sort of crying and whatnot? Is it like full on like that? Or
it's
a snot and stuff coming out?
Yeah. And it begins a period of mourning that goes on for a month.
Whoa.
Or 40 days, in fact. And it is just possible if you chose not this year but any other year that you'd find these commemorations going on in, of all places, sunny Pakuranga.
Oh, really?
Oh, what? Okay.
Because Pakuranga is the only active Shiite mosque in Auckland. There's another one in Hamilton. But the Shiites, you know, are a very small proportion of total Muslims,
right?
15%. But they really can't easily worship alongside Sunni Muslims. And although we've had a week devoted to Sunni Muslims, because the mosque in Christchurch was most definitely a Sunni mosque, the events that took place in the year 680 on the 10th day of the first month of the year. Actually, Sunni Muslims do commemorate this day, but they commemorate it because it's possibly, so they say, the day that Noah left the ark, or that Moses and the children of Israel escaped from Pharaoh and went across the Red Sea. So those are good days to commemorate. And they used to be quite big days in the original Islamic calendar, but they were eventually replaced by Ramadan, which became much more important. And we've talked enough about Ramadan.
So potentially at Pakuranga, someone was smacking themselves on the back with a sword and nobody should be alarmed about that kind of thing. Like I like the idea of somebody cruising past on a mobility scooter, just seeing that and going, fuck.
Well, contemporary Muslims, and I'd have to say that the Shiite Muslim website would suggest that they're in New Zealand that they're pretty cautious and they're more likely today to donate blood to the Red Cross.
Oh, there we go.
Or the Red Crescent. And that's a much softer way of doing of bringing the blood, as you can imagine.
way better result for the blood also.
Is it a sort of bring your own sword or bring your own chains situation? If you
if you're doing it to yourself, then it's
it's a ritual sword. It's a sword that you would use.
Very, very tempting to sharpen the sword on your off time.
But let me just explain the circumstances and why people should do this extraordinary act.
Okay.
Because this is actually a pretty horrific traumatic event, which has pushed it pushed this huge split in Islam. And this is 680, and the Prophet died in, was it 632? So within 50 years, Islam split down the middle. And it split down because of the issue of who was to control the Prophet's teachings after the Prophet was dead. And
what does that mean, sorry? So what does that mean, control
of
the teachings?
Well, there needs to be a guardian of the teaching, what is pure teaching, what is right teaching.
Right, okay.
And, I mean, originally, the concept that Muhammad was, that there'd be a caliphate, so there'd be some kind of new centre of politics as well as religion that would combine the, you know, combine the religious and the political power. And so inevitably, it was his family that would succeed to it. Mm. But pretty quickly, the strongest member of his family was his son-in-law, Ali, and Ali fell out very, very quickly with other Islamic leaders, and he was killed. And the family was outraged by this, and so that the only successors were a small number of brothers, particularly Hussein bin Ali. So Hussein bin Ali was the oldest son and a very prominent and very capable person who was seen by those who followed this tradition as the true successor to Muhammad. And but very quickly was declared by the people who had taken over control among Sunni Muslims. They said, well, he had to toe the line. They'd let him live so long as he would recognize the true successors of Muhammad, who were not the family. And so he believed this was wrong, and he tried to go to Mecca to make peace. And he was told very firmly by the troops that if you don't absolutely submit to the current caliph, then you're out of luck, mate. And so he set off to go back to the city where he thought he had been safe and where people had promised to be loyal. And on the route back, it's a pretty grotesque event. So there's just a little group of them. There's 72 men plus women and children. And so, and Hussein is leading this group of people. And they believe that in some ways that they're going to be protected because they're the successors, because they're their family.
Is it just the men that do the smacking on the back with the sword?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
But it's because the men were those who were slaughtered, you see.
Ah, right.
So they get to the edge of the River Euphrates in modern-day Iraq, and at this place called the Karbala, the troops of the opposition fall on them in their thousands and slaughter them. And so that's what they're commemorating, is this incredible slaughter where they strip the women of their jewelry and seize the last family members who are female and enslave them to the caliph, who they regard as the true caliph in Damascus. And it's only years later that they're free. So this is it's a nightmare slaughter of 72 men. Mm. And so for this, those who remain believing that it's the descendants of the Prophet, the actual literal descendants, who are the rightful heirs, need to commemorate this horrific event, because it's their birthday, really.
You'd potentially recognise these people at the beach that have scars on their backs from previous devotion. Yeah. The other interesting thing is, I'm sort of drawing parallels here between Catholic and Christian stuff, because don't they kind of wear like stuff to dig into them and remind themselves about the crown of thorns and all that kind of stuff?
Yes, well,
suffering or whatever.
There is this very interesting comparison with those parts of Catholicism that use flagellation in sort of the same way, that by grotesque treatment of the body, they will remind themselves of the true purity of spirit. So, yes, there's it's often the case in many religions that there's similarities, in just people's ritual behavior, because the notion of drawing blood is the notion
so
of
extreme.
Sacrifice. Seems so kind of natural.
You can't go any further than that either. It's almost like your people are just at a den and like, let's just fucking draw blood about it.
How many religions have moved towards just giving blood? Is that just the Shia thing, or do the Catholics do that as well as a way to remember?
It's certainly true that most modern-day Catholic authorities are horrified by these people who try to reenact the crucifixion, and it's the last remaining areas are those parts of, I think, the Philippines where there's a fairly grotesque popular Catholicism that's still very strong. Mm. I've never heard of Catholics diverting it towards giving to the Red Cross, but perhaps this is an idea that you should send to the Philippines.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah,
there's
a cardinal just waiting for good ideas, I think. it's Shia who do it, and it's an odd motivation to give blood, but on the other hand, it does draw blood. So it seems appropriate.
Yeah, and you get a chocky bicky as well.
Well, that's true. I just hope that chocolate's allowed in Islam. I'm not quite sure.
Oh, religion, you just got to tiptoe around everywhere, don't you?
Yes.
Oh, that's interesting, Peter. Thanks for that, mate. We'll catch
you next
Monday for another exciting edition of That's the Spirit.
Very good.
Cheers, mate.